Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Is Joe Biden a lame duck president? And as we head into the last few weeks of campaigning before the election in the United States, what does the phrase even mean? Well, to explain all, we're joined by Graham Finlay, lecturer in the School of Politics and International Relations at UCD. Hello, Graham. Lovely to have you with us. So we're going to look at this in the context of the US election. So it's probably worth starting with Joe Biden. We have Kamala Harris running. He's be gone from the White House come what may in January. So does that make him a lame duck president right now?
He definitely does. And he has self-identified as a lame duck president and has actually put out a whole commitment about what he's going to do with the last 6 months of his term. And this is something we're quite familiar with. Usually it starts a little later on if the president is running for office again, but after the election, right? So the official lame duck period is after the election, but before the inauguration.
Okay, so once we have a result in November, that's when it would traditionally start. But because he's not running, we're right back. We're in that at that point now.
And the same thing is true of a president like, say, Barack Obama, you know, who in 2016, who couldn't run again because of term limits. You know, so they're all in a phase where they don't have to promise anything to anybody. You know, they don't have to campaign. And the thought is very often that they can be bolder because they're unfettered by this need to get reelected. But of course, they're the standard bearer for the party, and their decisions can really negatively affect the party's fortunes, especially in the upcoming campaign.
So when he's making these promises about what he's going to do in the last couple of months, is his eye on helping the Democrats get Kamala Harris elected, or is it about legacy, or a bit of both?
I think it's a bit of both, and he's combining them quite effectively. He wants to focus on keeping his key legislation going because he still has bills which are under threat, maybe from court challenges or which are still progressing through Congress, which is unlikely to meet to pass anything more, frankly. He wants to work on rolling out some of his successes thus far. And this is a really great thing to combine with campaigning. So the Infrastructure Act, you know, the Inflation Reduction Act, this is leading to huge investments being rolled out in many swing states, often in places where Republicans voted against it. So you'll see him out in Wisconsin promoting investment into, you know, clean water or, you know, things like that. And obviously this is a twofer from the political and legacy point of view. He also wants to make a lot of foreign trips to shore up his international reputation. He's always been interested in foreign policy. And I'm sure he would love to make progress in the Middle East, but that's looking really difficult
now. That looks quite far away. I mean, if you're a Republican and you're looking at this, and you're looking at what Joe Biden is doing, and you're looking at, you know, the ability that he has to skew the narrative, if you like, electorally, it's hardly fair, is it, that somebody can be so actively campaigning from such a position of power?
There are debates. I think the Republicans are trying to drive a wedge between Biden and Harris by suggesting that they don't get along or Biden's not campaigning. He has promised to campaign. It does look unfair. I think Republicans, you know, really don't. No politician gets to complain about someone using the incumbency effect to get themselves back into office. What's really awkward, and we've been in this situation before, is with these devastating hurricanes. You know, it's a chance for the president and the vice president in their actual official roles to really take charge and be front and center, showing the American people that they care. And all the Republican senators and governors of these states pretty much have to cooperate with them if they're not to be seen to be neglecting their own people. And so it's something which can really, really help the incumbents, but it can also hurt them if, for some reason, they don't seem to be doing as good a job. And it looks like Hurricane Milton is going to be a colossal job.
Well, certainly from what we've been hearing this morning, and we'll know in 24 hours or so, the handover period is a little strange, isn't it? Because we have the election, we'll have somebody elected in November, and then you'll have Joe Biden carrying on until November. So if you compare that to the UK, for example, you have your election and the next person is in straight away.
Yeah, it's a really, really huge contrast. I mean, with the UK, I mean, we have a parliamentary system. I'm from Canada. We have a parliamentary system. I was still shocked that when the result is as clear as it was, the government changes over the next day, right? Yeah. They go to the king and Keir Starmer's in number 10. That is partly because the UK has a highly depoliticized civil service, which can just row in immediately. Whereas in the US, obviously it's a much bigger country and it's a much more complicated federal government, but they have 4,000 political appointees the president needs to put in place. And these are explicitly political people in every department.
You've got to change everybody. So it's not just one person or one party.
But they're taking an overtly political role next to a bunch of career civil servants. Mm-hmm. You know, and what we see, so the transition, there's an incredibly nerdy site for the Center of, for Presidential Transition. The government actually starts preparing for the transition a year in advance. And then the day after, and they get everything in place, they get all the briefing books and they sign memorandums of understanding, get them all ready. And the day after the election, office space, car parking is all made available for the incoming president's team, which could be quite different under Harris than under Biden, right, for example. And they've got all the briefings, there's national security briefings and things like that. What happens very often, though, is in the case of Donald Trump, they just were completely unprepared to win, basically. In 2016, there was a chaotic transition where they were sitting, the government officials and even the political officials from the Obama administration were sitting there waiting for the Trump teams to show up, and they didn't. You know, it was, which led to a very chaotic first few weeks where Donald Trump appointed fewer political appointees than any transition team in history or something like that, or recent history. And so Project 2025, of which many people may have heard, you know, is a 925-page blueprint focusing on that chaotic transition in 2016 and ensuring it's a 180-day transition plan to put all the political appointees in place with training provided by the project itself. And even more political appointees if they have their way, because their plan is to fire a lot of
these career
civil
servants.
He still
says that's not his plan, doesn't he?
He is now denying that that's his plan.
Put together by people who did work for him during his first term. Now, the National Day of Voting in November, it is the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November.
Yeah.
Hasn't always been that way, though, has it?
No. I mean, it was quite random almost until about 1845 when the U.S. decided it needed to have a regular period for elections. And so they did pick this. This can seem like somewhat of a strange date, but they don't want, you know, the Tuesday to be the first of the month when businesses are doing their tax receipts or for whatever reason. And then the Inauguration Day, which is also when Congress starts its new term, was March 4th. Until March 5th, or March 5th, if the 4th was a Sunday, because you can't have it on
a Sunday.
So
there was a very long lame duck period.
There was a very long lame duck period, and that's partly because it's just difficult for everybody to get to Washington and wind up their businesses and, you know, get everything together to find a place to live in Washington. But it increasingly got under pressure because they needed to respond to crises. So, for example, under James Buchanan, after Abraham Lincoln was elected, South Carolina led six other states out of the Union in terms of secession and started besieging Fort Sumter. James Buchanan, who was quite sympathetic to the South, sent a sort of supply relief ship to Fort Sumter in South Carolina, which was shot at by the South Carolinian troops, and he didn't do anything else. And so there was a sort of palpable sense that, you know, somebody should really do something about this. Mm-hmm. And then in the Great Depression, Herbert Hoover also thought that it was somehow going to sort itself out through private enterprise and things like that. And so when Franklin Delano Roosevelt was elected, he wanted to get in as soon as possible. Now, he didn't in 1932, but the Congress moved the time up to January 20th, which is what we have now, or the 21st, if January 20th is a Sunday. And so the first time they had this new lame duck schedule was in 1936.
Because that lacuna between the election and the inauguration, it could be seen as an opportune moment to rock the boat, right? If that was your intention.
It has been. And a lot of people are saying, well, you know, he has all these new immunities, thanks to the Supreme Court, for anything he does as president. And so he could do quite partisan things if he wanted to. Again, there are these norms which are not always adhered to. Mm-hmm. And we shouldn't forget that the lame duck sessions of Congress are also described as lame duck. So you've got a lame duck Congress during this period, which can pass legislation and can do all sorts of things. And they've had a number of lame duck sessions, whether it's to do sort of one specific thing, you know, to in the case of Bill Clinton, impeach Bill Clinton. That was the House of Representatives came back specifically to do that in the lame duck session. Sometimes it's to respond to an emergency like World War II or the Korean War or something like that. Sometimes it's to pass a whole lot of legislation because the Democrats had lost the House. You know, I think this was in something like 2010. Mm-hmm. Democrats lost the House of Representatives, so they wouldn't be able to pass legislation.
And so they rammed it all in before inauguration day.
Rammed a ton of legislation through in the lame duck session.
And that can be done. There's nothing against the rules. You just got to get your act together quickly in order to do it.
That's it. And you've got to have a cooperative Senate, mm-hmm. which they did have at the time. So there was even after Nixon resigned, there was a really, really extensive session where they passed a lot of legislation, but mostly they just tidied up all of the lacunae arising from Watergate, including revoking Nixon's ownership of his own tapes and documents so that they remained in government possession.
Right. So a lot can happen in that period.
An awful lot can happen.
So let's talk about another lame duck period, Lyndon Johnson and the Vietnam War. What happened there?
Now, he's most analogous to Joe Biden. Now, he withdrew while the primaries were still going on, so they had a primary race. But and there are lots of speculation about why he withdrew. He was becoming quite unpopular, and they had a very divided Democratic Party over the war in Vietnam. And he wasn't in great health. So for that reason, there are a lot of reasons why he might want to have left office, even though his original plan was to run for the second full term he was entitled to. So he gives up, and they have an actual leadership contest. Of course, in the middle of it, RFK, Robert F. Kennedy is assassinated, mm-hmm. Probably the front runner. And it ends up having his vice president take over as the nominee, Hubert Humphrey. And Hubert Humphrey, I mean, and this is something we could see with Kamala Harris, Hubert Humphrey took a much more peaceful and sort of negotiation-oriented approach to the Vietnam War. And then on October 31st, 1968, one of the original October surprises, Lyndon Baines Johnson announces that he's prepared to cease all bombing of North Vietnam if they're prepared to enter into talks. This helped Hubert Humphrey quite clearly. It's right before the election. It addressed the biggest problem which Johnson had, but it wasn't enough to get Hubert Humphrey elected and Richard Nixon wins
the
election.
And that's interesting in the context of now, because Kamala Harris could decide to take hold of the reins in this period in the lead up to the election, but she's not doing that, is she?
She's not really. I mean, she's taking credit for all the most popular things, and these are again the things which Biden is running on. He really wants to shore up sort of fixing drug prices like insulin so that people don't pay more than a certain amount. Mm-hmm. She's taking credit for all that stuff. There's some room for it to have slightly different policies, maybe slightly more higher expenditure policies, although Biden has been quite progressive in that area. Her one area to make a distinction between herself and Biden could be politics in the Middle East. But that is such a minefield for any Democrat that it's not clear where she could go.
Right. I just see in the last few minutes that the US government is releasing this list of generic drugs available to people on Medicare. That's exactly what we're talking about, isn't it? Pushing through these things. So you'll be able to get your inhalers, your metformin, your penicillin for $2.
Yeah, I mean, that is exactly what they probably should be doing, because that's where the Democrats can score big. And these individual issues. I mean, if you're dependent on insulin, you absolutely have to get this. And there are horrible stories about people dying because they can't afford their insulin. And so these individual issues, some of which are things they can do maybe by executive order or as part of existing legislation, and some things which look like they might survive a Supreme Court challenge. Mm-hmm. Currently, the Supreme Court is hearing a challenge to their regulation of what are called ghost guns, which are non-traceable gun kits, which with no serial numbers and which you apparently can put together easily.
Yeah.
Probably shouldn't be saying this on the radio. But in any case, the Biden administration wants to regulate them like any other kind of gun. And it looks like they may be able to, the Supreme Court may uphold that regulation. So it's these individual issues, which are really salient for a lot of people. Student debt is another one that Biden is hitting on right now. And Kamala Harris is definitely going to take some of the credit.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Very interesting look at this moment or this time between now and the election, and then from November to January when we have the inauguration. Graham Finley, thank you very much for joining us. We will take a break.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.